This is the Beat 97.9 FM, your happy station. Welcome to the Ink About Science Show, the show about science for science, coming your way right here in the city of Ibadan. Every Monday, 9 a.m. Till 9:45, and every Thursday, we bring you a repeat broadcast of each episode at 5 p.m. Now, the Ink About Science Show will bring experts, scientists, into the studio to help you break down, you know, complex science issues. So this is about science for science. Any questions you have, you direct them at our guest in the studio. My name is Alon Tobaso. Thank you for joining us on the show today. Episode 2, Season 5 of the Ink About Science Show. Today we'll be discussing the science behind reproduction and fertility. And our guest in the studio is Dr. Ademola Aladejare. He's been here before, actually. If you remember, he was here. He talked about the science behind DNA paternity. So this time around, we'll be looking at the science of production and fertility, because the process by which two organisms reproduce an offspring is so detailed and essential to understanding fertility and infertility issues. So join us today as our guest uncovers the science behind this topic and shares insight into various concerns that you might have on reproduction and fertility. So let's welcome Dr. Ademola Aladejare into the studio. Thank you for joining us. Welcome back, actually.
Having me again.
Great to have you again as well. Okay, so let's start off with, we have put two things together now, two very wide and multifaceted issues, reproduction and fertility. Let's start off with reproduction. Tell us the meaning and the science behind that very complex topic.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Reproductive science, or the science of reproduction, well, let's just define it as the study of biology of gametes. Now, gamete, of course, is sperm and egg. I wouldn't want to use the word reproductive cell to define reproductive science. So, of course, the sperm and the egg, true to the science behind conception and embryo development. So, what it is about is the science of the study of the biology of these cells, that's the egg and the sperm, true to the science behind conception, fertilization, conception, and the embryo development. Mm. So basically, that's the definition in layman's term.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, I would want us to talk, because for example, if we have two pregnant women in their first trimester, midway into their first trimester, two different women, one carrying a male child and one carrying a female child, there is really no way to I'm not even talking about scans now. I'm talking about, even if those embryos, those fetuses, can be looked into as at that time, the first 6 weeks, they look the same. You can't tell which one is male or which one is female. So what happens? What is the... How do they come into being? How is this differences? How do they start being different? I mean, differentiating.
Kind okay. Of that yes. Way. Okay. Yes.
So, well, the gametes, the sperm and egg. I'm just trying to break it down so that we won't be talking too much science. Science.
No, we can talk science. I mean, it's a science show, so it's about science.
Gametes are derived from the primordial germ cell. Now this primordial germ cell, they are formed during the second week of life. That is, and most times our pregnancies are detected 2 weeks after they get pregnant. So this PGC, I would rather want to call them PGC, primordial germ cells, they're formed in the second week of life. And during the fourth week of life, through to the end of fifth week of life, well, these cells are found at the walls of the yolk sac. Let me state that. Yolk sac. We all have eggs. We've all seen eggs. So somehow, once in our lives, we were something closer to that. Of course, we're not with shells and all that. But we're something... So just let's imagine the yolk of an egg. Now, these PGCs were found at the walls of the yolk sac. And during the fourth to the end of the fifth week, they start migrating from this position to where the developing gonads will be. So they start migrating, and as they are migrating, they keep on dividing. So mitotically, let me put it that way, mitotical division, of course, in the science show, we should know it's a division whereby they replicate themselves just continuously. So you can imagine something that was two today, tomorrow in a few minutes it's four, eight, continuously like that. So they keep on dividing while they migrate. At the end of the fifth week, they get to they should be at the developing gonad, and After about this time, they would begin what we call gametogenesis. That is the development and differentiation and maturation of these gametes.
Okay.
So what this means is that as at this time, about this time, that's when the male would be differentiating from the female, all because of the presence of what we call the Y chromosomes in their DNA. So basically, that's the combined thing that the both exhibit during their course of life.
Okay.
So let's say the first 6-7 weeks, you might not be able to identify which one from which, but after this process begins, then everything comes to play. So let me just briefly talk about what happens in genetic female.
Okay.
Genetic female, that is a woman. Genetic female. So, okay, oogenesis is the development and maturation of this oocyte. So gametogenesis, like I said, from where I stopped the other time, gametogenesis. Now, for the woman, it is called oogenesis. Their own gametogenesis they do is called oogenesis. Now, this I would want to state that maturation of the female eggs begins before birth. Now, we know that they've been developing, but they are not maturing as at when they go to the developing gonads. Now, from there, maturation for the woman, maturation of the eggs, they begin from birth.
Okay.
So that's the difference between the woman and the man. That's one of the difference between the woman and the man. The woman, the eggs have been created in them from birth. Like, so they don't have an additional egg coming from anywhere. So that's why if you see a 10-year-old girl today, her eggs are 10 years old. If you see a 50-year-old woman today, her eggs, if she still has, are 50 years old. So, well, we'll still talk about that in fertility.
Yes.
But still in the production, maturation of the oocyte begins before birth. Once the PGC arrives at the gonads of the genetic female, it differentiates into the oogonia. And it continues, it still continues its mitotic division. So it keeps on dividing, even though... Now, I want us to remember, we've talked about PGC getting to the developing gonad. Now, we said that they would differentiate into what we called the oogonia.
Okay.
Now, some of this oogonia will begin what we call the meiotic, or meiosis division. So, we understand that there is mitotic division and there is meiosis division. So, some of these eggs, some of these oogonias will start... this meiosis division, and when they get to the prophase of the meiosis one, they are arrested. So they are kind of arrested or maybe stopped, arrested. And these are those ones arrested at this stage are what we call the primary oocytes.
Okay.
Now, like I said, they keep on developing, they keep on dividing. But some begins meiosis, but they are arrested at meiosis one. The prophase stage of meiosis one. Now, at the 5th month, would have the highest number.
That's the 5th month of pregnancy.
Of pregnancy, okay. Yes. We'll have the highest number of the oogonia PGC present in the woman. They will have about 7 million. That's the the division, they reach the climax kind of. At this stage, from the 5th month of development, they start dying off. So there's something that there's more, it's more of the good ones would, you know, it's more of a survival of the fittest. So some that have a trait that they exhibit that would make them stay longer would stay, while the other ones would start, you know, dying off.
Okay.
And at the 7th month, most of the primary oocytes, now remember those ones that started meiosis one and were arrested, most of them recovered by a flat follicular cells. That, and they would be referred to with these flat follicular cells, they refer to as a primordial follicle. From this stage, then they enter into a sort of resting stage. From this primordial follicle, they enter a resting stage where they would rest. So from then, that's from about the 7th month, nothing happens again, no development. So they enter what we call the diplotin stage. So so that happens. Remember we said by 51 there are 7 million.
Yes.
About 7 million estimatedly. Now by birth, all what we have left is between 600 to 800,000. That's all what we have left.
Okay.
By the time you get to puberty, a genetic female gets puberty, she has only about 40,000 left.
Mm.
And of this 40,000, throughout our reproductive stage, reproductive cycle, she would ovulate not up to 500 eggs. So we can see from about 7 million, which was the highest, to 500, which they will eventually ovulate. So you can see there's a lot of eggs that would eventually be lost in the process.
Mm.
So basically, that's what happens for... So that's just a kind of summary.
Okay. So you've defined production as the reproduction, as the production of an offspring by, you know, sexual, or sometimes in non-human situations, asexual process.
Okay.
So, well, in this case now, you focused on what happens at the pregnancy stage, where, you know, that separation happens, for the male and for the female. But let's look at before the pregnancy stage now. It's all part of the science behind reproduction as well, because they are key, you know, part of the reproductive system, that all of these things happen, that before these things now come into play. I'd like to focus on before the pregnancy now.
Okay, so why I'm starting from this? Okay, like there was a question, well, should I say a question they do ask, which came first, the egg or the chicken?
Yes, so, I understand that one.
I'm trying to do now is... Yes. Let's even say I'm trying to bring it from the onset of life now.
All right.
That is the female that would be the mother.
Mm.
So I'm starting from the beginning. I am trying to make us see that this is what happens to that woman
when eventually becomes
that eventually before she now gets to the stage of pregnancy.
Okay.
So that's why I'm bringing it from the
from that part. Okay. Okay.
Okay. So I just want us to we'll talk more about that when we get to fertility.
All right.
When we get to the woman now at fertility.
Yes.
Now, let's say the woman was still... So, this the cycle of that woman before she got pregnant, before she was born herself. So, you know, she had to lose so many eggs and all that. So, she's now born. She's now at puberty.
Okay.
Okay. So, let me just digress a bit to the male so that they'll be at the same level.
Okay. So we've talked about the female. But before we go to the male, just to clarify, in this context now, which one came first, the egg or the chicken?
Oh, well, I wouldn't know. Of course, the egg.
The egg. Okay. Yes. All right. Just on a lighter note. So let's look at the male parts now.
For the genetic male, it's a bit different. Yes. Like we said, we stopped at the migration of the PGC, primordial germ cell, to the gonads, and they remain dormant until puberty. Unlike the female, that they were doing some activity already before they were born, but for the man, they remain dormant until puberty, and then they do differentiate into a kind of stem cell called spermatogonia.
Okay,
I would want to also state that the temperature of the body of the body is quite warm. Let me just finish this before I had that.
Okay.
So okay, the stem cell now give rise to what we call primary spermatocytes, which through two successful meiosis division, you know, there will be a meiosis one and a meiosis two.
Right.
After this successful meiosis division, they produce what we call spermatids. So a cell will produce four spermatids. Now, these spermatids will now go through what we call spermiogenesis.
Right.
Spermatogenesis is more or less like the whole thing together. That is development of this PGC to matured sperm cells.
Yeah.
But there's a process in the later part called spermiogenesis. This is a process that will develop the egg, will shape the sperm, reduce the size of the egg, put on the acrosome of the cap, let me put it that way, cap of the sperm, reduce the put this nucleus where they should be, localize them, and all the necessary things that they should go through. That's what spermiogenesis is about. So it's this spermiogenesis that would develop the spermatids into spermatocytes, that is a matured sperm.
Okay.
Now, it takes about 75 days for a sperm to go through this process. That is from the spermatogonia to the matured sperm cell. So, basically that. So, back to what I was trying to chip in the other time. Because of the temperature of the body is quite warm, sperms cannot really function well at this basal temperature, 37 degrees.
Mm.
So the nature has it such a way that the scrotum will descend to where it is, it's actually in the abdomen before.
Okay.
So, but for it to be functional and for it to do as well as it should, the scrotum would descend into the scrotal sac. So, if you see a newborn or a small boy before puberty, most times their scrotum is still inside and their scrotum will just be flaccid, okay, even though they have, but there's not the scrotum. The sac, scrotal sac is there, but the scrotum is not really in it there,
okay,
until just puberty. before it descends into that. So, just that's just a summary of the male. So, you can see it doesn't really have much more stories.
Like the female.
Like the female.
Okay. Yeah. All right, it's the Inkaba Science Show. We're looking at the very complex process of reproduction and fertility. We've decided to look at reproduction first, and we're going to fertility. We have in the studio Dr. Ademola Ladejari. He's a senior embryologist and expert in vitro fertilization. When we get back from this break, we'll continue with the conversation. I'll move on to the fertility stage of the discussion. If you have any question, you can call 0700-1000-979. We're back after this break. Don't go away.
Dad, why does the sun follow me everywhere I go?
I think it's actually just everywhere you go.
What do you mean, Daddy?
My son. Well, science explains how the Earth revolves around the sun.
Interesting, Dad. I thought the Earth is a stationary object. How does it revolve around the sun?
I don't have an accurate answer for this, but I do know where to find answers. The Inkaba Science Show on the Beat 97.9 FM, Ibadan.
Okay, Daddy.
Son, where are you off to?
I'm off to tell my friends to tune in to the Inkaba Science Show every Monday on the Beat 97.9 FM, Ibadan by 9 a.m. and also catch the repeat broadcast on Thursday by 5 p.m. We can't miss it.
The Inkaba Science Show, powered by Inkaba Biotech, Africa's genomics company.
This is the Inkaba Science Show.
This is Inkaba Science Show right here on the Beat 97.9 FM. Yesterday, we're looking at the science of reproduction and fertility. We have in the studio Dr. Ademola Ladejari. He's a senior embryologist and expert in vitro fertilization. On the first part of the show, we talked about reproduction, the science behind, you know, how the separation happens from the female part and the male part from the process of pregnancy. What happened to the development of a female embryo? Abby, did I get that correctly? And the male fetus as well. So right now, we'll be moving the conversation beyond reproduction now to fertility. Remember, you can call 0700-1000-979. So let's talk about fertility now. The definition first, okay, before we look at the process, because it's a very complex issue, something that in this part of the world people have different interpretations of it. We've seen it, you know, come up in different, you know, worldview as well. So let's start over the science part, the definition.
Okay, fertility. When we hear fertility, a lot of times we think it's just about, you know, so many people have different definition of fertility. Just to, well, let me just put in layman terms. Fertility is the ability of an individual or couple to reproduce through normal sexual activity. So, fertility is about ability to reproduce through normal sexual activity. So, for one to be fertile, there are some things that should be in place. There are some things that should, you know, be there. Okay, I'll be stating some few things. The first thing is the production of enough LD sperm by the male.
Okay.
Now, the male, after going through all what we've said before as a reproductive biology, they are expected that they should have a normal LD sperm, or at least WHO said, well, it used to be 20 million per male, that's the sperm count then, but they've revised it recently. I think they've even revised it again. But it used to be, well, it was at 15 million, at 15 million per male. The motility, at least 40%, and of that 40%, 40% of them should be fast again.
So for a male to be considered fertile, it has to have 15 million sperm per male.
Yes.
Okay, that's so one criteria.
So, 15 million spermatozoa per male. So, if the person is ejaculating a standard of 2 males, that's 30 million in that 2 males. Now, they should have 15 million in a meal, at least.
Okay.
Now, that 15 million, the motile ones should be at least 40%.
Okay.
So, if you say 40% out of 15 million, that's a bit less, that lesser than 7.5. Let's even say 7 million. So, they should have at least, from that 15 million, 7 million of them should be motile. Now, of these motile ones, at least 50% should be fast, because now motility, some could be dancing at the spot, they are motile, they are not dead. So motility is just to check the difference between the ones that are living and the ones that are dead.
Okay.
More or less like the ones that are viable, like the ones we can see that they have life in them from us assessing them, and the ones that we can't really see if they have life in them.
Mm.
So out of this 7 million now, from this 15 million, 50% of them should be fast, because some will be fast, some will be sluggish, and some will just be on the spot.
So 50% must be fast.
Yes.
No, making their way to the
yes,
egg, they should be, towards the egg now.
They should be, at least in their progressive motion, they should be moving fast and straight.
Okay.
They shouldn't just be moving on the circle. So of this 15 million, we are saying that 3.5 million of them should be very active.
Right.
So that is that. Also, in the morphology, they have to appear good. Sperms with hole in the head, you know, because when we look at them closely, sperms are like, they are like tiny, should I say, tadpole. They look like that. Tiny, very, in every sperm, every semen that a man produces, it's expected that these sperms, they are the functional units of that semen. That sperm is the functional unit of the semen.
Okay.
So they are the ones that we, so sometimes a man will produce 5 mils, but he might not have anything inside it. And some will produce 0.5 mils, and there are millions, hundreds of millions in them.
Okay.
So it's not a function of the volume of what we produce, but it's the function of the content of what is being produced. Okay. So if someone can fall into that category, at least 15 million, 40% motility, progressive movements, at least they should have 50% of that.
So such person is considered a fertile male.
Fertile person.
Okay.
So production of it, have enough LD sperm. That has, of course, the morphology should be right, the pH should be right, and all that is, that person has a pass mark there.
Okay.
So let's say we are having a couple and we are trying to mark them.
Mm.
So if you have that, that one is a pass mark. Then we go to the next thing: production of a viable egg by the female. Now, talking about viable eggs, like I have stated earlier, the age of the woman is also the age of her eggs. No woman produces or reproduces eggs after she has been born. So, a 10-year-old lady has her eggs intact in her.
Already?
Already. So, she is going to take all this egg from birth through a lifetime.
Mm.
Now, of course, you can't expect a 20-year-old boy, or should I say 18? How old was this our former world athlete? What's his name again? This Jamaican man.
Usain Bolt?
Bolt. Yeah. How old was he? I mean, when he was younger than he is now, I'm sure he's faster than he is right now.
Okay.
Although, of course, he's not in the Olympics anymore.
Mm.
What I'm just trying to state is that when the eggs are younger,
they are more...
They are better.
All right.
The quality are better. And that's why you see a woman that has a child now. And maybe when she had a child, maybe when she was younger, maybe when she was in the 18s, in her teens or early 20s, and maybe after 10 years, she eventually got married to someone else. Or maybe she had a husband before, she had given birth to some children there. Then after some years, 10 years, she has another husband. She wants to have children again. And she's finding it difficult, because the quality of eggs has reduced. Now, I would want to state that the quality of eggs reduces gradually with age. But as the woman enters the age 35, the quality depreciates rapidly.
Mm.
Now, the chances for a woman that has... in her 20s, is within 40 to 60% actually. In her early, that is a woman, a healthy woman that has no other issues. Her chance is within 40 to 60%. Now, as she enters her 20s, it drops gradually to maybe 40% or less. By the time she enters 35, the chances are dropping to about 20%. 35, 37. Now, from 37, it keeps on
dropping. Okay.
So, by the time she gets to 40, her chances are lesser than 10%.
Hmm.
Over 40, they are lesser than 5%.
Wow.
Now, you might ask, you might tell me, oh, but I know of my mother's auntie or my mother's cousin or someone there that will give birth at 45. Yes, it's very much possible. But that same woman won't be battling with infertility when she was 25. That woman might have good quality eggs from maybe genetically good quality eggs, and she's been giving birth, or maybe she's been fertile all her life. And at that 45, even at that 45, you can't still compare her fertility with when she was 25 when she was when she was 25 years old. So age is a big factor
for women.
For women,
is age a big factor for the men as well? Is that is it scientifically possible? Tell us about that.
Yes. Okay. So I would just say something that would capture both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I've stated, the eggs has been there for a long time before they start developing.
Okay.
Now they went through what we call the resting stage before birth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that resting stage, we know it has helped in preserving the eggs and not bringing them all out at once. That is, the ovulation you'll be having today, for the ovulation they'll be having in January, the eggs they are ovulating in January is all where they're going to ovulate. They won't, because they have maybe a kind of stimulation, whatever, ovulate the eggs for February or March in January. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
Okay.
That is, the system has a way of releasing the eggs per time. So the eggs that should be released in January, about 15 to like 40, would be released in January. The ones in February will be released in February. The ones in March will be released in March.
So they don't release in advance. That's what I'm saying.
They don't release. It's not like, oh, I'm going to release all my eggs today.
Mm.
Or maybe because I used a particular drug and because I want to be fertile and I want to give birth, so I want all my eggs to come out today. And, you know, it doesn't work that way. The system has a way of bringing it out. There's a way to mature. Just like the onions that has layers. You have to peel one layer before you get to the next layer. That's how it is.
Mm.
Now, because they've been dormant in the body for a while, there are some genetic issues that comes up too. Now that's why, apart from it not being as fresh or as good as it should be, there are some genetic things that come into play that maybe because you've kept them for too long, they might end up giving birth to children with genetical issues. So that's where men comes in too.
Okay.
The sperm, of course, for the sperm, like I said, it has a lifespan of about 74 days. So in every 74 days, the sperm that I produce today, I mean, the spermatids that I produce today, in another few days, I mean, well, okay, the stem cell, because they'll be taking them gradually.
Yeah.
Those ones turn into sperm. In 74 days, they have the lifespan, they are out or not. The body assimilate them. They die off, kind of. Then another new fresh sperm. But still, the stem cell also has been produced before birth. It's been present, I mean, since puberty. The stem cells have been produced since
so
puberty.
For the male, it's from puberty.
Yes.
For female, it's been there before birth.
Yes.
Okay.
But the male, they are not sperms yet.
Okay.
They are not sperms yet. They are just spermatogonial stem cells. So they are released at whenever the body needs them. That is, when there is a depression. Okay. These ones are 74 days old already. So it's more or less like sperms are produced almost every day. But, you know, the accumulation of them is what makes it much in the body. So, today, some spermatogonial stem cells are developing, they are moving into, they are developing further, going through the spermatogenesis process.
Yeah.
Now, tomorrow, some too will start theirs. Next tomorrow, some will start theirs and all. So, they keep on being accumulated in the body. Those that are matured already get to the next, I mean, they are stored in the epididymis. So for the man, by age 75 now, for instance, the man might still have sperm cells, but the quality, the genetic property of these cells might not be good enough.
So age is also a factor for the men. So I just wanted to clear it,
yes,
because we've focused on how age is a factor for women.
The
fact that when you're 35, the ability, the, you know, efficacy of the egg reduces drastically.
Yes.
So for men as well, age is also a factor.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's not just as much pronounced
as the women.
As the women. But of course, it's also a factor that must not be overlooked.
So we've identified who can be called a fertile man, and also who can be called a fertile woman. You know, I think we've been able to identify
for
the women. Okay.
For generally, for a
couple. All right.
Okay. So the third thing we've talked about healthy sperm to talk about viable egg. The next thing is successful passage of sperm through an open duct from the male testes to the female fallopian tube. Now, the sperms are good. The eggs are good. But is the pathway open for them to go through? Now, sperms are in the scrotal sac, in the epididymis. When it's time for ejaculation, they move through and pass through the penis. Now, is everything they should pass through, all the duct, are they all open? Because, like I said, there's a difference between the semen and the sperm. The semen is every other thing the sperm needs to be healthy, to move, and to live, at least to move it out of the body. But if the passage of the semen, of the sperm, sorry, has been blocked, then you just have an empty semen that is being produced without sperm cells in it, without the functional units of that semen in it. So it must be an open passage, open duct from the sperm now to the woman. Also, the woman produces ovulates from the ovaries. The eggs comes out from the ovaries. Now, the eggs, are they able to access, to move freely from that ovaries to the endometrium where implantation will take place? That's also a factor.
Okay.
So, what we are saying is the third one is successful passage of the sperm, successful passage for the eggs. Because it's like you want to send something, or you want to move from point A to point D, and there's a blockage between B and C. There's no way you would pass. So even though they are both doing, they are both on fire, they are both doing very fantastic, very well and all that, but still, if there's a blockage, there won't be an
access. The pathway is not clear. Okay. Yeah.
So also, penetration of an LT egg, that's a fourth point, penetration of an LT egg. That has to do with the viability of the sperm still and viability of the egg. Because the sperms could now get to the egg and they can't penetrate it. Maybe due to age, and well, we've explained that earlier. Mm. If the egg is good, if it's viable, and there should be some sort of penetration, because the egg has to penetrate into the sperm, has to penetrate into the egg for fertilization to take place. Now, the other thing, the fifth thing is implantation.
Okay.
Implantation now is the sperm has met with the egg. They've met together and we now have a fertilized egg.
Okay. The process of conception has begun.
Yes.
Okay.
This embryo is expected to implant. Now, let me just give us a layman theory, just to make it, to buttress it, to make it easier to understand. Now, we are playing football. If you have to play football on a field of grass, if the grass is, let's say, if it's cut so low, you can play your shot and it would move in freely.
Mm.
But should, in case you play, you get to the field and the field is bushy, the grass are so tall that the ball will be embedded in such. The ball will move freely. As the ball is rolling, it will be hindered and eventually it gets stopped. That is what happens with implantation. Now, the endometrium is conditioned when it's expecting for implantation to come the condition in such a way that the fibrils, the endometrial wall, are kind of bushy. The embryo is like a ball.
It's rolling.
It's coming from, it's coming in from the ovaries, then the sperm meets it on the way, it fertilizes, then it's just rolling from the ovaries, rolling to the endometrium. So it keeps on rolling. When it gets to the endometrium and the place is low, it just roll off.
Oh.
Okay? But when it rolls and it gets to the endometrium and it's well prepared and it's bushy in such a way that it can't really move easily, then it gets trapped. Now, when it gets trapped, the embryo itself, looking for nutrients, starts embedding itself inside these bushes. It keeps on embedding. So you put a ball in the bush for a while, and after maybe a month, or you go there, you see that it won't be the same color or something.
Yeah.
Even though it's not implanting itself, but nature itself is implanting it. So the embryo itself is trying to implant itself into it's trying to get nutrient for itself.
Mm.
So some development happens there, since it's a trophoblast, the trophoblast divides into this trophoblast and trophoblast, and it starts embedding the maternal endometrial wall. So if the endometrium is not prepared well, there won't be an an implantation.
It's the Incubus Science Show. We've talked about a lot. There's still a lot to cover, actually, but we have to move very fast now. To be part of the show, call 0700-1000-979. We have an expert in the studio in terms of reproduction and fertility. We've been talking about the science behind both. We've also been able to distinguish between what can be referred to as a fertile male and who can be referred to as a fertile female as well. 0700-1000-979. So, Doctor, you've identified these factors that must be there for fertility to take place. You know, I'd like to ask you, are there anything that we do as human beings, either male or female, that can, you know, alter the system from being perfect as it's supposed to be from what you've explained now?
Okay.
Because when you have infertility as a problem with couple, you know, oftentimes in this part of the world, they blame the woman, you know, okay, that the woman is responsible. So let's look at both sides now. Okay, so is it genetic? Is it, based on individual factor? Are there some that are just what you can explain? Let's look at those intricacies now.
Firstly, let me talk about, because, of course, in this part of the world, we believe that when there is a couple undergoing, encountering infertility.
Our callers are calling now, Doctor. Hello, good morning. Hello?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Your name, where are you calling from?
Yes. My name is Damilola from Alakia.
Damilola from Alakia. Go ahead, Damilola.
Yeah, I think that was the doctor. In case of the HPG hormone during pregnancy, I think that it's better to detect birth of pregnancy. I guess some other things that it does.
In the case of the HPV hormone.
HCG
hormone. Okay.
And secondly, I want to ask.
No, sorry, Damola, you said you didn't get that first question. Can you repeat it again? HCG hormone.
I said the human colony is gonadotropin hormone.
Okay.
I tried to make him to detect the presence of pregnancy in a woman.
Okay.
What else does it do?
All right. Okay.
And secondly, I want to ask, I guess functional foods or anything that we could use to boost the reproductive system.
Okay. Thank you. So he said that apart from helping to detect the pregnancy in a woman, that's HCG hormone, what else does it do in the system of the woman? And then are there things we can do to boost, you know, the effectiveness of our reproductive system to make us more fertile? Something related to the question I asked before.
Yeah. HCG hormone, it's not like it's just there to detect pregnancy. It's more of how would I put it? Now, the pituitary gland is responsible for the hormone system of the body. Now, it helps in, of course, it's more or less like a signaling in the body. This person is pregnant, some hormones shouldn't come into play. Now, what the pituitary gland does is that it controls, it's more or less like signaling. It controls things by, okay, this person is this person shouldn't do this. So there's an hormone in play. This person is pregnant, or this person has a baby. Prolactin is, so that the person having milk produced.
Yes.
So the system
lactating.
Yes, the system does it in such a way. So HCG is a signaling, not just detect, but also to tell the other systems, the other some other hormones not to be produced. So it's more or less like the pituitary gland being on top of his game and making some things to be. It's a signaling thing.
Okay.
So it's not just to dictate because we want to do PT strips and that's just what it is there for. But it is for the system to be controlled in pregnancy. This and this should be, this and this not should be.
Okay.
So that is that. And also about
what you can do to boost your
now,
you know. Fertility. Because I've heard a lot of stories. I think we spoke about it off air. You know, I've heard stories about men that wear tight jeans. I've heard stories about men that put their laptop on their lap, put their phone in their pocket, and everything. So, are these some of the factors, really, from an expert point of view?
Yes, because it's this way. Lifestyle is one of the things that affect us. Apart from the age, which is the biggest factor.
Okay.
Infections are one of those things. So someone who is being infected steadily, like has infections within him, somehow, for example, for the male now, which is also a problem for the male, sometimes there's something we call mumps. A man that has mumps maybe when he was younger, might not remember when he's older. And mumps, they can also have mumps because the organisms that causes mumps also feast on reproductive, on the sperm cells.
Okay.
So someone that has mumps when he was growing might not know that he had, of course, had that. And then when he's ready to produce, he's having poor sperms or he doesn't have sperms at all. It could be as a result of the infection he has had when he was younger. So that is one. Two is also the lifestyle we live. Drinking, cigarettes and all, they do have, in fact, it has a lot to do.
Smoking and drinking.
Yes, on the quality of sperm. And health, eating balanced diet too. It has a lot to do with. Then also talking about temperatures. Like I stated when we started, the temperature of the scrotum is kind of lower than the body temperature. And the nature has the way of designing that so that the scrotum won't stay in there. So when we bring hot stuffs, warm stuffs to our laps, when we put on tight clothing, it gives room for, it increases the temperature of the scrotum. And in so doing, it affects one, the sperm itself, then two, the DNA, it might cause DNA fragmentation of the sperm. Now, that doesn't mean that someone that is putting on tight clothing or that someone that is putting laptops on. I know of someone that every time he works with a laptop and it's always on his laps and he has five kids. He has
five.
You know, that is not, it's not that it would eradicate that totally. Like, it will make them to have children.
Let's take this call, doctor. Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you calling from?
My name is Jenny. I'm calling from Olugbo.
From where?
From Olugbo.
Olugbo. Okay, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I have to ask this. Like, the month that a man is producing a sperm, if the man is not having contact with a woman, what will happen with the man?
Okay.
Can you?
Okay, I can hear you. I think I got your question. Yes.
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, thank you.
The man is producing a sperm every month. And if the man is not having contact with the woman, what will happen with the man?
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So the man is producing.
The man is fertile, meets all the criteria you mentioned. And
he's not having sex.
Yes.
Of course, the system has a way of taking that out of the system too.
Mm.
Some men, when they are in the toilet, doing maybe number two, number two most times, sperms comes out of their penis.
Mm-hmm.
The body has a way of taking that off.
Okay.
So some would say, they have their feud with sperm and they must. It's not. That's not.
There's no scientific backing for it.
There's no scientific backing. That shouldn't be a reason for. But the thing there is just that when the E is to produce, the first sperm you would produce might most likely, the motility will be lower because it's been accumulated for a while, but you have a lot of sperm. A lot of the conception will be much and motility will be lower, but after consecutive production, it will be fine.
Mm.
So the system has a way of taking control of that.
Okay.
So basically,
back to your point. Yeah.
So
you were making a point about the lifestyle that we live and how it impacts.
So that doesn't mean that someone that does that all the time would not have children.
Mm.
It means that it would affect.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, it would affect.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that it will take everything off him.
Mm.
So someone that is having 10 million, or maybe let's say someone that is having 15 million, the good ones, the viable sperms, they might drop to like maybe 30 million over time. After, you know, this a lifestyle thing. It will keep on dropping gradually and the viability would be reducing. That's just basically it. But of course, now imagine someone that has, let's say, 15 million. Over time, of course. Okay, let me tell you what I did some times ago. That was when I got to Ibadan, then about some 6 years ago. Then I was looking for there's something we call sperm donors in fertility centers. So I was trying to do some work on the youth I see. Some people came in and, you know, then I took it all the way to University of Ibadan, got some guys that were interested in it.
And to donate their sperm.
To donate their sperm. So of course I told them I was going to do a free scan. I mean a free this thing for them first, test for them. And all. So I just wanted to do something, you know, and to tell them about it if they'll be interested. And it would surprise you that out of every 10 guy, young men,
young students in the university, in the
ages of 21 to like maybe 28, out of every 10, it was only two, well, statistically, now eventually, two and a half
That were fertile.
So that's statistically, you know, because of that were fertile. Wow. So they went up to 30%.
As young as they were.
That would meet the criteria of...
That you set out earlier. Okay. Okay.
That would meet the criteria. That is, meet 20 million, meet 15 million at least, and then meet 50%, 40% motility, 50% fast moving forward.
Mm.
You know, it was just about 20% of them. And that got me wondering that, does this mean that, and it wasn't from just a sample, it was from, at least I tried to move around and get different samples. So that tells me that, well, there was a paper about some few years ago that was, well, the caption was, will the human race be extinct? Is the human going to extinction or something?
Yes.
Fertility is reducing by the year.
Mm.
I think there is a standard rate of about, I think, 8% per year since, of course, some years ago. So, our lifestyle has really affected fertility of both male and female. Drinking and all that, because this is what happens. We call something oxidative stress. Now, oxidative stress, what alcohol and this lifestyle we do that is not really hygienic, alcohol, taking on balanced diet, you know, everything, putting heat on our scrotums and all, what it does is it increases the oxidative stress on these our sperm tissues, on these our reproductive cells. And over time, this oxidative stress has its toll on these cells.
Mm.
And over time, they start depreciating. They start depreciating, and it might not be at that time we need them most.
Okay.
That we would not have them to use.
Dr. Oladijare, I know that there's a lot you want us to cover, and but unfortunately our time is up. We're way past our time. But before we go, I just want you to quickly talk on this one. I think we also spoke about it before we came on air. The you know, the dynamics now. You know, usually when there's infertility, they blame the woman, like I said. So you mentioned that there is the genetic factor, there is the human-induced factor, there's the, you know, the factor for the male or female. So let's look at the percentage now before we go. Just a quick one before we go. Unfortunately, we can't take any more calls because our time is up.
Okay.
Quick one before we go.
Infertility, when we say infertility, the statistic behind it is, for every 100 people that are infertile, the causes are 30% women. So it's not all the woman you see.
So 30% for the woman
is caused by the woman. So the woman factor, the female factor is about 30%.
All right.
The male factor is another 30%.
So it's equal?
It's equal, yes.
Wow.
So we have what we call the combined factor. That is both male and female. In such situation, maybe the sperm is not good enough, the egg is not good enough. Mm. That's about another 30%.
Okay.
Now the 10% is an unknown cause. That is what everything is right. Everything is, the man is perfect, the woman is perfect. But still, they are not having conceptions. That's what we call unexplained.
Okay.
And of course, over time, when they continue over time, they will definitely conceive. So basically, that's the
thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Ademola Ladijare, once again for being a part of the show. He's a senior embryologist and expert in vitro fertilization. He's been talking about the science of reproduction and fertility right here on the Incubus Science. You join us on Thursday, 5 p.m. for